You will sleep better than you have ever slept. You've never been this relaxed. Are you ready to change your life?
I'm Rusty Diamond, certified hypnotist. You don't need to leave your house. You can stay in your bed. You can stay in your favorite chair. You just need a computer or your phone. You can get a hold of me. Stay at home. I'll make your life better.
HypnosisIsGreat.com.
It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker. It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker.
Yo, man. Boomus Rusty, what's up, everyone? It is Monday. Back at it because Mondays are fucking cool. And if they're not cool, it's time to change. Welcome to the podcast, the public access podcast. Now in Pennsylvania, the podcast. So shout out to there. Anyway, thank you, everyone, for being here and doing what you do. And if you're watching this and you're like, fuck, I don't want to look at this guy's stupid face, you can go check it out anywhere on podcasts. Podcasts. Look up a podcast, type it in, do it. Find me there. Unless it's on some obscure one, then I'm probably not there. Or if you're listening and you're like, what does this guy look like? Go to YouTube. Pretty easy. That's all you got to do. Everything's pretty easy. So it's time for me to bring on my special guest. And I have my special guest right here and right now. And he's back again. My special guest right here and right now is, I don't know. You may have to take this over at some point, but maybe Uncle Cliffy.
Who's uncle? Your uncle? Goodness gracious.
Well, there was a guy. So Clifford fucking Myers here, man.
What's up? Thanks for having me, Rusty. And you have upped your production value, bro. You got a hypnosis commercial with your floating head now. We're going down cryptic tunnels. Like, what's happening over here?
If only I knew. If only I knew or I remembered. I'm trying to up a little bit. I got suggested to up it some more and do post-production stuff, but I haven't quite committed to that level yet. That's the next one where it would be putting in the start music, that stuff that you were just referring to in post-production rather than just playing it. But that's a whole nother level of work. And then I have to put it at the end and then put something in the middle. And
You're crushing it, bro. You're crushing it. And I'm just saying, I can see a big difference from the last time we had a podcast to now, like even with your background and everything. So it's just great to see you like self-investing and doing your thing. You know what I'm saying?
Thank you, man. I appreciate that for putting me over on my show, man. Why not?
Because
last time we talked, so we also have to do this. My goal for this one is to keep it under 2 hours.
Because speaking of, you had to pre-warn me. Okay, fair enough. Yeah.
So I don't have to go and try to cut it down to 2 hours so I can opus clip this later on if things don't, you know, go all over.
Just warn me for getting into the zone.
Yeah, if we're getting there, I'll start, you know, talking about something.
Banana. That'll be our code word.
Banana's a good one, dude.
So then we got to make like a banana split. That's what that's all about.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, dude, like, what? Okay. So back to the Uncle Cliffy real quick. So there was a basketball player who used to play for the Portland Trailblazers a long time ago. His name was Cliff Robinson, but he died a few years ago. Wasn't me.
Wait, I know Cliff Robinson. He was on Survivor, right?
Yep, he was on Survivor.
Yeah, no, yeah. That guy was awesome. He had a crazy good blindside by the one and only Tony Vlachos. Brat.
No shit.
Yeah, yeah, dude, I'm a huge Survivor fan. That's how I know all my athletes.
Okay, good. So, yeah, so you know, like, about, you know, Uncle Cliffy and fucking...
I didn't realize he had Uncle Cliffy as his nickname. That's funny. Like, yeah, because he was on the show, and he was one of those guys that everyone was like, oh, man, he went out early, but we love to have him back. He had a great attitude. He had a big moment, the way he was blindsided. And then, like, yeah, unfortunately, he passed away. But, like, I always wonder about being really big guy in your lifespan. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, when I see, like, a 6'6" guy or something, I'm like, how long do you got? Like, you're a living giant in this world.
You know? There aren't too many old, like, really tall guys.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and when's the last time you've seen an old dude that's like 6'7"?
Yeah, but like little people, you see some old little people, but you don't see old, like really tall people.
Well, because old people shrink. Even like my mom's lost like 2 inches in the past year.
Yeah.
You'd kill me if I compared her to old people, though. So like, do not show my mom this podcast. Yeah.
She's got a while. She's got a while before she's an old people. but yeah, I mean, dude, like, I don't know. It's I just found out, like, actually right before I guess I did research. This is for the podcast to learn about, because I'm like, I think I remember him like dying a few years ago, but I'm not sure. It could just be kind of a blur. But so I had to research that, and then I saw that. Yeah, then I saw that. But the Survivor part. And yes. I was like, oh, okay, well, cool, man. And then like, so I guess Uncle Cliffy was a dance that he would do after scoring, and then that just became his nickname.
Oh, and I didn't know that. That's funny. Do you think now that he's passed away, I can take his moniker, or is that not looked good?
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking, like, I think you'd be an all right person to pass the torch to for the Cliffiness.
Well, people look at me. They think I'm a fit basketball player. That's the first impression they get.
I think so. I think that would be like, because yeah, you you'd be like the perfect one to go to. There'd be nobody else. Like, I don't think that, you know, if it's, you know, because I don't know. I was going to ask you this too. So when you first started, in comedy, did you have people suggesting like jokes about your name? Because that's usually one of the first jokes that you do. And then did you do any, or did you tell them to kind of fuck off, or did
you know, it's interesting because you had people that, like, the first joke that would ever be made about me would be about my name, right? Like, if I was meeting kids on the playground, they call me Clifford the Big Red Dog. It's right. Just the lowest hanging fruit, and I would try to find something that was a little bit, like, you know, a little bit more elevated than the go-to joke. And like, I kids got a little creative in grade 8. They stopped calling me Clifford the Big Red Dog, and they started calling me Cliffilis, like syphilis. Ooh, and my brother's name is Herbie, and they were calling him Herbies. It was like a whole thing.
Wow.
That's you know what I mean? That's... So when I first started, I think I talked about that a little bit, but it's like, it's not funny enough to be a real stand-up bit. It's more like, it is a shadow of funny that gives you an idea of what funny can look like, but the funny is so much beyond names or how we look. Like, one of the first jokes I ever made, I lived in a place called Hamilton, and I said I wasn't from here. I guess not sure why I moved here. I guess I saw the word ham and kind of lost my mind because I'm a big guy. It's a dumb joke, a play on words, again, a shadow of funny, but not really funny, but you're still smiling, like you see it,
right?
But like, it's not till you're years in that you actually realize like where the funny is when you cut in and go deep, and it's your stories and your life. It's beyond the first impressions and your name. But like, the worst thing is when people want you to tell them a joke and you just don't have one for them. You know, like, I'm just like, I just don't have that for you. But if you talk to me, I will make you laugh. That's the craziest thing. If you just don't ask for it, you'll laugh.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I do. Like, whenever someone would tell me that one, I'd always have something like the worst fucking joke I could think of with the worst possible delivery I could do. And then they wouldn't ask me anymore. And I guess that's probably goes to a lot of things. Like, if I do it shitty enough, then, you know, they're not going to ask me anymore. But
yeah, well, I think there's levels to like bullying. And one of the first levels, name calling. Right. And like, it's right. One of the things why parents, like, I know when we were looking for the baby book, I'm not with my baby mom anymore, but like, you know, when we were together, we're looking through that baby book and the conversation is, hey, what about this name? You could say this, you could say this. Like, I'm thinking of all the roast jokes in my head. And then, So when we gave my son a classic name, we call him Henry, right? Like,
right.
She's like, I like Henry because you can't give him a nickname. And I'm like, no, you can still give him a nickname. She's like, no, you can't. It's Henry. And I'm like, Benjamin Button, Henny Boo Boo, and like Hendo Calrissian. I just start going. I'm like, yeah, you can get creative in this life, but none of those names are punching down names. Like, you can't really, like, I got a hen on my wrist, you know, it's for my son, but also for my Portuguese heritage. We love chickens. And so, you know, like, for me, I was like, yeah, I know he's going to get made fun of in life, but I want him to be made fun of for who he is as a weirdo and not the name he sports, you know, because it's when you attack our character is when we become who we're going to be. And I want my son to be attacked for his character. None of this bullshit surface stuff.
Like, it's just not, born with a mullet. Not even trying.
Yeah, he was born with a mullet, and I wondered if that was going to be an ongoing thing. Like, do I have the mullet kid? You know, like,
does he know that? Does he know that he was born with a mullet? Have you got to tell him this?
Yeah, well, he's 7 now. It's so funny. Okay. My kid's he's a little bit higher needs. He's definitely like a very rambunctious child, high energy child. And he's so funny because he has no filter. So he's going around like he'll tell a lifeguard, like, he's like, have you ever got punched in the penis before? Like, literally just like bold, crazy stuff that should not leave a person's mouth. If I said it, I'd be told by the YMCA, Clifford, you can't come back here anymore. You keep talking to lifeguards about penises and we don't like it. We don't like it one bit, but we excuse it for a child, you know? And because he's just so bold, like, he'll go up to a fat person and be like, what got you so fat? Chocolate? Was it ice cream? For my dad, it was ice cream. Like, and I'm just like, could you cool it with the, I'm going to be extra spectrum-y today. Like, can we just tone it down a little bit? But like, for me, I love that kind of, I don't know. I don't know at what point we lose the brash ignorance of the world and start trying to self-police what we say to people. You know, what we say in public, worrying about how we come off. He doesn't have any of that. It is it's so beautiful.
I was talking to my buddy Quiz like before this about, and we were saying that, because like, so when I was a kid, I get people making fun of me a lot, but then I would go right, like, throw it right back, but then I'd like make the person cry. and then I would get in trouble. Yeah. And it would be me, the person who was getting picked on, and then but then like I made the person cry, so then I'd get in trouble. Because, you know, I mean, I guess it helps out later in life, but I mean, yeah, at some point you get to this point where you have to sort of like, wait, hold up, I shouldn't say this, or I may get in trouble.
I mean, yes and no, because I actually think that ebbs and flows depending on what you're doing in life, right? Like, you speak on a public platform, you have a podcast. I don't think you can fully afford to be careful about what you say. Like, in some things, yes, but in some things, no. Because in the attention landscape that is the internet, if you're not provocative or changing the conversation to some degree or piercing the noise to some degree, you're just washed away, like, on the rocks, like everyone else. It's actually one of the things that, like, not that I ever try to be intentionally offensive or something like that, but I also like, because I'm heady and because I like to just have like hippie philosophical conversations and go with the wind, that doesn't really fit into what people want to hear. They want to hear me bash the conservatives or bash the liberals or talk about why we can't be doing drag story time. And I just don't really give a shit about any of those subjects. Any of the polarizing subjects actually pierce the attention. I don't fully care about them, but I do think that like, it's important for me to still not care about talking about that stuff, right? Like, you know, even as an entertainer, it's on the flip side. Like, it's almost like for me to be able to get ahead or get more of an audience, I need to polarize people. But because I want to stick to what I do, I'm just going to go the other way, talk about what I want to talk about. And those that fuck with me. And those that don't, they probably never heard of me and don't care. And it's all good anyways.
Then that's an important part. Like the people who are going to fuck with you are going to fuck with you. And like, those are your people. And,
yeah, bro, I was in a I was in a trauma group today. Like I'm starting like my healing journey because every comedian comes from some sort of trauma background. Right.
Right. Yeah.
I fucking crushed. Like I was crushing it in this group session. And I was just like, man, like for me, like you could take away the comedy stage and I'll always have a comedy stage, whether it's at like some therapy group or at the pool or at the grocery store. For me, it's really a way of life of being able to make people laugh and how much joy I get out of that and how much joy I just get out of interesting conversations. But like a lot of the stuff in the zeitgeist, I could very much care less about.
Yeah. And you know, sometimes like in those places where it's not, you're not like recording it or it's not like it's for an audience, but like it's something that's just for you people. And then it's like, that's it. That's the whole place. But then that was the spot. Like you have that moment, man, like where it was awesome. And why the fuck not, dude? Like, and you know, have a spot. Like I remember, you know, AA meetings or something like those.
AA
like,
meetings are great because you have people with the wildest ass stories.
Yeah. And you got the storytelling. You got people who will tell the same story every single time.
You always got that dude. Yeah.
You know, there's always that dude. And but then you got people that'll just tell the craziest shit. And you can pick up a lot of stuff from that. And, you know, learning how to work an audience.
Well,
you know, I guess anywhere.
I think about these places too, because I go to AA as well. And like, I like these kind of groups because like, let's say like, you know, like there's like eight of us in the room, right? So I'm making like, maybe me makes number nine. So I'm making eight people laugh. Now, you know, I've done shows for decent paychecks for small crowds for 25 people, but it's some kind of work thing and they paid a corporate price or whatever. Yeah. I would take the eight people that are from a broken background, trying to make their lives better, trying to learn skills, trying to do things. I'd rather make them laugh than the people pay me very well. You know, because that's a bit of a bias on my end, but it's one of those things where I'm like, when I originally got into comedy, it was about making people happy. Like that was what it was about. And now as you go on, it becomes about so much other things. At some point you think you're a truth speaker and you're the one, the modern philosopher that will speak truth of power. And then like you suddenly get an ego and all this kind of stuff. And then you get slammed and then you burn down and then you're like, oh, I'm fucking nothing and I'm a nobody. And then you become a glorious nobody. You enjoy your place in this world, right? Like it's a lot of ebb and flow with it.
Yeah.
And for me, I'm back at that place where it's about making people happy, where like, because I have other things, right? I've been building my own business and I've been being a parent and, you know, chasing love and all the things that makes us alive and enjoying this life. Like, I like that. And it's weird when people get it twisted, you know, like even with comedy, a lot of comedians think it's about making people laugh. And it's not necessarily about making people laugh. And I learned this from wrestlers. That's about making people feel. You just want them to feel something. You want to tell them a story that takes them away from their own. You want to bring them into something that reflects something they need to see. Like, that's what people really want is because sometimes, like, we're going to our 9-to-5. we're numb the fuck out. And then we got our coffee and we got our donuts and we got our routines. And hey, good morning. How are you? Same day, different dollar, whatever the fuck they say. You know what I mean? And we get caught in these loops. And I think we just want to be like real and alive with each other. And I do think that most people want that.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if you get it like with comedy, but like there always seems to be a lot of wrestling fans that will say like, dude, my life fucking is even like when I was a fan and I was going, I'd be like, dude, a lot of shit I'm doing in my life is kind of shitty, but dude, like for that, like 2-3 hours, I'm fucking, I don't like care about anything else.
Well, it's amazing because like, you know, I have to laugh at people sometimes. Like I work with corporate teams and I love working with them. I love their initiatives. I think they're doing really cool stuff in this world. But you have to understand when people become domesticated to a certain degree and sophisticated to a certain degree, that their expectations rise of what's appropriate and not appropriate. They become more entitled of what you can say and what you can't say. And they have more of an opinion in their taste of what's art and what's not art. And for me, I find that very funny because I look at wrestling as one of the highest art forms that exist because it's for all people. It goes to the lowest common denominator and it tells stories of victory and defeat. Heroes and villains overcoming and falling short of the mark. That is what life is all about. That's what these stories are about. When we're booing the bad guy, we're booing ourselves when we're the bad guy. And when we're cheering on the good guy, we're believing we can fly too. You know, and there's that element of wrestling that you can't do in any A24 film. I'm not going to see that at cons. I don't care if you're Louis C.K. You're not giving me that. You're not there with the guy in the group home, but also like the lawyer who just loves wrestling. We're all in the same room. We're all in the same room watching the same thing, watching the blood, sweat and tears. Of people just trying to win and have a victory. And whatever that is in your life, maybe it's your victory looks like putting boundaries in with an overbearing parent or overcoming an addiction or trying to lose weight because of obesity. Whatever victory you're looking for, you want to finish your fucking story. And that's what it's about. You know what I mean, man? Yeah. And so like, I love comedy, but I also look at wrestling as a place where it can do things that comedians can't because we're trapped to a microphone and a cord. Like on Space Jam, when Daffy Duck talks about being in hell for eternity as a comedian, having to tell the same jokes to the same people. I'm like, well, in the wrestling ring, you tell stories with your body. And I was telling you before we got on the recording podcast that like, I really look up to R-Truth as one of the funniest people in the world. Funnier. Like if someone said, who's funnier? Ron Killings, the wrestler that wrestles as R-Truth, or Dave Chappelle, I'm saying R-Truth. And that does not diminish Dave Chappelle. That does not diminish what he's done in the comedy world. But R-Truth is for everyone. He's making the kid laugh. He's making grandpa laugh. He's making 20,000 people of different backgrounds. But the thing is when Dave Chappelle is making people laugh, those are 20,000 Dave Chappelle fans. There's the difference.
Yeah,
there's the difference because Ron Killings will walk in and just change the way you think about connecting through laughing. And I love that because he doesn't take himself seriously. He allows himself to be the butt of the joke. He allows himself to come off stupid, to come off like the silly one. When how many of us are trying not to be stupid? Someone says a big word in a conversation and you pretend you know what they're talking about. Oh, yes, pontificate. Right? Like, we don't fucking know. And so, like, for me, like, I see it as a glorious, one of the best art forms in the world because of how lowbrow it can be.
Yeah, and I mean, dude, just like it being able to have any part where you can, getting someone to like actually, I don't know, because like you can do it, and I don't know who's done it in comedy though, but like to that like effect.
I'm trying to think of like who could do that in comedy, but the thing is like they're coming in with like their jokes and stuff, right? Like someone that's used to just talking to people naturally, like someone like a David Letterman, Right? Yeah. Like, that's just used to being funny. Like, and someone like a Norm MacDonald, who was just of a different breed. Right? And he didn't care if he was going to offend you. He was able to play the heel and the baby face at the same time. He was a very interesting guy. So, yeah. Like, but, like, to be honest, what we're accomplishing in comedy is just a little different. Right? Like, for me, the intention of going to laugh is different than the intention to going to be entertained and laughing in the process. That's what wrestling is. You're going to be entertained. Maybe you're entertained by someone making you laugh. Maybe you're entertained by someone flying off a ladder. Maybe you're entertained by a big guy getting slammed. Whatever it may be that's entertaining you, right? But like in comedy, there's an expectation of laughter, which raises the pressure on the performer. And that's why a good comedian is so good, because they are tapped into the pressure. They have a relationship with it. And it's just different for wrestlers and comedy. Now, I love saying that wrestlers are more elevated than comedians because of how angry it makes comedians. That's the main reason why I say it. I don't know if that's my real opinion, but I like saying it because comedians are so full of shit. We're so full of ourselves. And like, it's just so true. We're brooding with our notebooks and pens like we're the next Socrates. Like, we have to fuck off. Like, it's so silly. So like, for me, I'm just like, no, we are so privileged to be able to do this, you know, to be able to make people laugh for money. That's a cool thing.
Yeah.
But like, it's not, we're not special. And this is a Mike Tyson thing. Mike Tyson said that people who think they're somebody, they're always the offended ones. Like, who are you to say something rude around me? Who are you to show me something I don't want to see? Where the real professionals of the world are the nobodies. People who keep their head down, go to work, go get it done. And I'm a nobody that lives for the nobodies. Like, that's kind of where I'm like, it's not a brand thing. It's really like a life value alignment philosophy kind of thing. Like, I align with the idea that, yeah, I'm no one. I'm here to make you laugh, and then you're going to forget my name in 2 days.
Is that going to be on your shirt? Is that on your shirts that are on your merch store?
I don't have no merch right now. I'm working on getting merch with my buddy Terry Gordon is helping me out doing some wonderful artwork. But he does these really awesome. I would love to give a shout out to Terry Gordon, if you don't mind, because this guy.
No, I do. I don't. No, don't. Yeah. Please give a shout. Yeah.
Well, because I know you're in the wrestling world, and this guy's an artist from Toronto who, do you remember Garbage Pail Kids?
Fuck yes, I do.
He makes Garbage Pail Kid cards of AEW wrestlers.
Oh, right? Shit.
So he's I think Mad Mod Poet God or something. If you look Terry Gordon up on Google, you'll find him. This guy does awesome artwork that's like Garbage Pail Kid themed. He does fetish bears. He's so weird and unique, and I love those kind of people. And yeah, I just want to give Terry a shout out since we're on the subject, but like he's gonna help me with some t-shirts. But for now, I take everything one day at a time. My big focus is my business of just trying to grow it, trying to understand it, doing a lot of research. And it's a slow boil when you're building for the long term. Sometimes it looks like you've plateaued, but like I can see my daily growth. You know what I mean?
And it's important, there's a lot more to everything than just, if you have your own business, there's a lot.
Well, attitude is everything. For me, it's like you either have a great attitude or you don't. And like, I have so much conflict in my life. You know, you got to remember when I first did this podcast with you is when I first started my business. And so it was like over a year ago, right?
Really?
A year ago. Yeah. And I was just like trying to figure out this business. I was kind of hitting the ground grinding at it, and I met you in a Facebook group, and I jumped on, and it was one of those things where I had this vision, I had this dream, but in order to try to go for it, I was going to become poor. I was going to go into intentional poverty. I wasn't going to be taking a straight 40 hours. I was going to get my work in odd gigs and odd jobs, and I was taking on a significant amount of hardships that was going to put a strain on my relationships. Like now I'm almost 2 years in, it'll be 2 years in May, And yeah, I've had some relationships go through the ringer. I've lost some people. I've gained new people. I've had friendships blossom from strangers that I would have never expected. And for me, it's given me this incredible perspective that no matter how hard things are, it's most likely going to be okay. You're most likely going to survive it. And if you have that attitude every single day, you're always going to learn and grow. So like, I've hit plateaus, but then like last Thursday, for example, I got to speak in a YMCA lobby in front of a bunch of senior citizens for a senior living fair, right?
Holy shit.
Everyone's okay. Over 65, and I'm telling them about comedy and mental health. The amount of engaging questions, they're asking me about laughter and dementia and laughter and Alzheimer's, and I was able to actually pull that research out of my ass because I knew it. Like I've been going so deep into these subjects about how comedy helps us physically and mentally that I was really able to answer their questions earnestly with real backed up research. And I was so proud of myself for what I've learned. I volunteered my time. I didn't gain anything, you know, monetarily from that. What I gained from that was the knowledge of my own growth. You know what I mean?
Priceless and
absolutely priceless. Like just knowing that like negative Nancy Clifford from maybe 10 years ago isn't that same guy anymore, and I'm so happy I'm not, because goodness gracious, that guy had no longevity.
It's real easy to remember that person, and I know that person.
We all know that person. I think some of us have been that person. We know.
Yeah, I've been that person for sure. And I mean, like you were saying, the people that fuck with you are the people that are going to fuck with you either way. And I mean, so are you hanging out at the YMCA? Because I was at the shout out to YMCA. I was at the YMCA a few hours ago.
I love the YMCA. And one of the things for me is the steam room.
You got a steam room of yours?
We got a steam room, bro.
Fuck, I need to step up. I need to tell them to step that shit up.
Oh, dude, I'm in there sweating with naked old guys, and they want to talk while we can like hardly breathe, like just dicks out for Harambe. It's incredible. Right. And like for me, like you'll see a theme with me. I was raised blue collar. I'm very I gravitate towards regular people. You know what I mean? Like, even if I'm around artists and entrepreneurs for too long, I start getting annoyed with all the grinding. You know, everyone's on their grind and everyone's not pitching a thing. And, you know, I like stuff like this that's in spurts and we get to have a lively conversation and then go our separate ways. You know, that's nice, you know, and this serves a purpose and it gets to live on the internet forever. And that's wonderful. But like when I go to the YMCA, it's regular folks trying to lose a bit of weight, gain a bit of muscle, get out of the house, talk to people. I met an old lady who was, you know, she had to be in her 70s, 80s, and she saw me reading Catcher in the Rye. And she's like, oh, it's been so many years since I've read that one. And I'm like, you know what? I read it in high school, and I realized I didn't remember a single thing about it. And I was like, I wanted to reread this. And she's like, oh, dear, I have done this with so many books in my life. And we're talking about the books that we love but forgot. And I'm having this regular conversation. Her name was Maggie. I remember her name was Maggie. And she was just a nice lady. And she was not on no grind. She wasn't trying to sell me something. I didn't have to sign up for an email. Like, she was cool. And for me, that gives me a little breath of life. When I'm in AA, I'm feeling a little breath of life from real people with real stories. But where I get caught up is like, you know, I have a lot of friends that are a little bit more proprietors. They make really good salaries and they have good jobs and they carry themselves a certain way, which is good. You know, I understand it. But sometimes I'm like, why do we have to bend that way? Just because you have more, you have to be a certain thing. Like, well, like sometimes I'm like, are you not, I don't want to call people phony, but there is like a certain level of phoniness. We see it with billionaires all the time, right? Yeah. We see it with really rich people being full of shit on all sorts of things, right? But like for me, like there's certain levels of, you know, people changing because they got to be on their best behavior because they don't want to affect a job position or a friendship that could break off, that maybe that's a useful ally, you know, like all that kind of stuff. I think really takes away from us being able to connect honestly. And I try to get rid of barriers. So when I'm going to the YMCA, that's reflective of my mission in life. When I'm going to AA, that's reflective of my mission in life. But when I'm like in a suit and trying to pretend to be some type of way, all of a sudden I feel like a phony. I'm not saying everyone else is. There could be some real honest people in those circles, but I feel like a phony.
You're trying to dicks out for Harambe. You are dicks out for Harambe all over the place, wherever you're going. And that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
And that's what you should be doing. And like, fucking shout
this
out.
This episode's called Dicks Out for Harambe, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Shout it out is. For Harambe, man.
Bro, we all miss him.
Dude, I know, man.
Well, you know, I was in a really interesting situation the past few months because I was co-living with my ex-girlfriend and now we're trying to work it out at this point right now. We've kind of come full circle and we're trying to repair things and go to couples therapy. And if we can't repair it, end amicably through therapy. And, you know, like we're really being conscientious here because she's had a positive impact in my son's life. We've been a part of each other's lives for years. We're giving it the old college try. But when we were co-living and broken up, there was an odd situation where I kind of landed accidentally into a bit of a love triangle. A little bit. And I had an emotional connection with another person. Nothing else, but it was an emotional connection, which sometimes people say is worse.
Okay. So
you're a guy. You're a guy.
I'm a guy.
You can imagine how a female might see that as a no thing.
Yep. No, I've heard that. I've heard that and experienced it.
Have you? Okay.
Yeah. So I gotcha.
I've never experienced having my emotions divided that way before, right?
I know it's a thing.
Bro, you got to hear this. So, like, they were both Geminis whose birthday was one day apart. One is 22, the other is 41. Okay?
Okay.
They're literally, the younger one looks like a young version of the older one. The older one looks like an older version of the younger one. It's
weird. Have you told them this?
Yes, I did, because I'm too open. But and that's the thing. They were both aware of each other. Now, the older one was more proprietous, had a very good job, white collar job. The younger one, blue collar job, right? And it was really interesting because I almost found all my life philosophies, my views, in some kind of weird tug of war with this Gemini infestation happening in my life. And I'm a Pisces, so you know I have an infinite capacity to love. And that's dangerous when you're messing with these 4D chess woman that is the lovely Gemini. So, like, I'm in their web. I'm caught. I'm loving it. And I like the tinge of crazy that I'm getting from either side. So, like, for myself, I've always said, you know, you're living a good life when it's a story worth telling. And I really very much felt like I was in a wonderful, beautiful, messy story. You know, like as hurtful as some things may have ended up, as cold as some things may have ended up, I learned so much about people. I learned about myself. I learned about love. And ultimately, you know, I'm trying to make it work with my ex, and she's a real one. And if it doesn't work out with us, I'm always going to be so thankful that she was in my life. And I'm thankful to the other person too. You know, like I'm thankful that she entered my life. She taught me a lot, but she also showed me a glimpse into a world that I didn't want to be in. You know,
which is good to know too, which is.
Do you know how I knew that it was probably inevitable that it would never work?
I don't. I don't. Well, no.
She called stand up my hobby.
Oh
no.
Okay.
Damn. I'm like, imagine calling someone's soul their hobby.
Right.
and that's the thing. Yeah. I'm like so romantic about life. You know, like for me, I'm just like, no, like it's comedy. It's in my veins and my blood and my heart. Like, what do you mean my hobby? No, I play Hearthstone at night. That's my hobby. I watch wrestling, you know what I mean? Like, no, that's not my hobby. That's my passion. And I'm not giving it any more breath than that because it's a lowbrow passion. But I love comedy. I love how it connects me to people. And I think it matters.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so, I mean, like, and one other thing, like, with the going to the couples therapy, like, that's only going to benefit you in the future. Like, whatever the outcome is.
Yep.
Only going to fucking benefit you, man.
And that's the thing. Like, you know, we grew up in a generation where our parents didn't go to therapy. Our parents didn't regularly, you know, do counseling and do self-care stuff. That wasn't part of the conversation in the 90s, you know? And so nowadays I'm like, no, this is very healthy. I want to, like, if we're going to continue forward, I want us to thrive as wonderful partners. But if we're not going to go forward, like, I want us to end amicably, and I got your back. You know, right. that is the absolute truth, is like, I got her back, you know? And like, it's one of those things where the stories we want aren't always the stories we get, but we're in the stories we're in.
And we need those stories to get to the other stories.
That's it. And we have to kind of accept that. We have to accept that the story was what it was. Did I want it to be different? What if the timing was this? What if I met the other one in different circumstances? Maybe things would have played out differently. Or maybe they would have been worse. Who knows? But you can't play what if games. So
you can play those all fucking day, but yeah, they're not going to get you anywhere.
I mean, yeah, but it won't get you nowhere, you know? Yeah. Like,
you're going to be in the same place, just with a lot less fucking mental strength of anything. Like, that just fucking drains you. And yeah, nothing.
But I've come out just so, like, my God, thank you. Like, you know, thank you for being in my life for me to learn that, you know? Like, that was so, I don't know if I would have learned that lesson from any other person. You know what I mean? Even like the worst people, you can probably say that about. And like, that's probably harder to, but you know what I mean? Like, you think of the people that really fucking hurt you in life. You know?
And you're like, hey, you're a piece of shit, but thank you. Now I know, like, now I know to like watch out for that, or like to be aware how I'm reacting to that.
Yeah, like, and like, we all have different comfort levels in life, like what we're willing to tolerate and not willing to tolerate, how much we protect ourselves, how much we bubble wrap our own ideas. That was another thing. Like, we're ideologically, I can't even say that word, different, but never discussed our opinions on that stuff. It was one of those things that we knew that if we got into it, it probably wouldn't be good. So for the sake of being nice, we'll just not talk about those things. But that's not real, you know? And that's kind of the reason why, like, I am trying to make it work with my partner, because I'm like, well, she does see me for who I am. And that's a hard thing to find in this world, for someone to really see you. Right? To see that, like, where your intentions are. And like, sometimes I get so low, like when things are going bad and, you know, everything's piling. I'll go to my friend Scott. He's a comedian in Halifax, Scott McLean. And he has an offensive comedy style. It's not for everyone. It's actually not really for me, to be honest. Like, but like, him as a person, he's a good guy and his intentions are in the right place. And one of the things he always says to me when I'm feeling really down on myself, he's like, Cliff, you are on your way to being a force for good. You are daily contributing to these intentions that are going to help people. Like, he reminds me of my mission. And now I think what happens is a lot of us just don't have a mission, right? A lot of us don't have an aim, a thing to walk towards. I find it really helpful for me to be like, well, I'm creating these comedy programs that help people with social and emotional learning, and I can help a group of people maybe have better conversations or maybe increase their self-confidence. And that to me is really worthwhile, and I'm okay doing that. And if I have that impact on 8 people or 80 people or 800 people, it doesn't matter, as long as I had an impact. Right. But we're the hardest on ourselves, and I'm not the one to remind myself of my own mission all the time. So it is nice to have a friend in your corner that goes, bro, this is what you're about. Keep being about it.
Yeah. You know? What was that? I don't, man, I'm fucking losing it. I thought I had it, but, But yeah, dude, like, yeah, you got to keep being about it. And, you know, yeah, sometimes you never know. Like, you just like, you're like, okay, it's just what I do. Like, is it my, am I doing the right thing? Should I keep doing this? And but like, yeah, I know I should. I know I should. This, but,
doubt's hard, right? Like, like I've been riddled with self-doubt my whole life. And it's mostly because, like, I'm doing something that others are saying I shouldn't be doing in a certain type of way, right? Like, you know, like I've heard so much from certain family members that, like, get a good job, get security, blah, 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 right? You want these certain labels that represent you well. And I've accepted so many things that just make me kind of unemployable. You know what I mean? Like I'm cool with my neck tattoos and hand tattoos, and I'm all right with being a brash comedian. I don't care if I've said something offensive publicly, because that was Clifford in the past. And if we need to discuss it, we will, but we probably won't, because I don't know. I haven't caught you red-handed in every offensive thing you've done, and we're not going to play tic-tac-toe here. So you know what I mean? Like, right. This is one of those things where we're just going to move forward. And most things is like, for me, just accepting my place of like, yeah, like you love this. This is where you're at. You like taking people on a journey. You love storytelling. You love connecting. So you're in the right place. And it's just figuring out how to do that in different ways. And like, you know, I've been washing dishes in a pub, you know, making the waitresses laugh and like whatever. Like I pick up what I need to pick up to just keep the lights on. But like for me, that's grit, that's will, that's determination. I can't settle for a safe life at the expense of a beautiful one.
And that's a hard thing too, to like, because there's always that, like, it's just so ingrained in us. And then it's,
I don't like it. of course I want more safety and stability and predictability. Of course I do.
Yeah.
But I'm working towards it. I'm working towards getting that on my terms, which is just harder. Yeah. And listen, bro, you might 2 years from now, we're doing this podcast and I'm living on a park bench and I'm just like, hey, Rusty, it didn't work out so well. You know, but I still go to the Y. Right? Like, it's one of those things, but like, I'm okay. I've accepted it. No matter where I'm at, I've accepted it. So like, I don't know. I do think we're scared. I do think like we see it in our education. Everything's bubble wrap now. You know, we're trying to bubble wrap kids. We're afraid of them being exposed to certain ideas or falling and getting hurt. And, you know, there's all this trying to protect. And the truth is, in life, is there's no equality. There's no true equality in nature. Right? Like, right. The males lead packs, predators eat prey. You know, there's just like, there's no equality. So we are going to get hurt. We're not always going to be protected. We're not going to always know how to protect ourselves. That's a hard reality for a lot of people to face. And I think that's one of the reasons why when you're talking to the average person, you're talking to the average unprotected person, right? The person that does not know when their next paycheck's necessarily coming. Does, you know, someone trying to pay back CERB while also being in debt and having to pay child support? Like, these are real people with real issues. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. And,
yeah, I sorry. Mean, go ahead.
No, that's cool. I was going to say it, but then, I mean, there's the why. You always got the why, man. Like, and but no matter what, dude, the why's going to be there. So, I mean, that's enough fucking predictability, man. If the why's there.
Oh, love it, man. I walk in. Maria says, hey. I'm like, hey, Maria, what's up? Blah, blah. She knows I forgot my card, so she swipes me in. You know, it's like some of that predictability is very fun. And and they're also like, I find like most people in my experience are kind when they're not being competitive. You know, when they don't think that they need to beat you at something, like, oh, this person can take my position or this person can take my stage time or something like that. When there's not those stakes aren't in the picture, most people treat each other quite well, you know?
Yeah.
But I think like, and maybe it's just the internet amplifying everything, but when I look at core issues, The core issues I see is not being able to get along and not being able to communicate. Right? When you can probably deduce every war to that, you know, and then there's financial gain and that complicates things and all that horrible stuff. But essentially, if we were able to master how we get along and how we communicate with one another, how we accept each other's differences instead of how we go to war over them, well, then we solve the problem, I think. We're not solving every problem, but we're solving the root problem. And I think if we solve that problem, everything else dominoes.
Yeah, which is, yeah, not putting the fucking Band-Aid on a fucking huge gash.
And not pretending like life's not incredibly uncomfortable. Not pretending like we're not supposed to be creatures of discomfort. We're supposed to go through hard things. You know, I say to my son all the time, like, he'll be really upset and he'll get crying. He's like, Dad, I can't do it. I'm like, well, I believe you can do it. And then I'm like, what does Dad tell you? And he's like, we can do hard things. I'm like, we can. So what can we do this hard thing? And then he'll start thinking, oh, what if we did this? Or, like, you know, you start trying to create solutions and become resourceful instead of just sitting there and being wounded. And now my son, he feels a lot. He absorbs a lot. Things hurt his feelings. He couldn't get the markers in the drawer right the other day, and he was upset about that. You know, and I'm looking at my son and I'm seeing, like, okay, I have to be, it's called a velvet fist. With an iron fist, you're too heavy, but with a velvet fist, you're soft but firm. And I think that's the approach we need to discomfort, is I'm going to allow you a certain level of discomfort, but I'm going to gently guide you through it. You know, like, I'm going to be kind to your struggle, but I'm not going to take away your struggle. I'm going to let you have it.
You need to have that struggle, or else it's never like there's nothing to better yourself. There's someone else's, you figured out a way to, you know, get around a solution, but then you're not bettering yourself to be able to prepare for the next time something like that goes down.
We were at this playground, this indoor playground thing where they have different mats that you can flip on and these, like, you know, big shapes that you can move around and stuff like that. And a kid took my kid's thing, you know, that he was playing with. And my kid comes up to me and he's, like, upset about it. And I don't know, I had a dad moment where I'm like, oh, my kid's sad. I was like, well, do you want me to, like, say something to him and just be like, hey, you know, he was playing with that. And then I was really proud of him. He goes, no, Dad, this is my responsibility. And because it's one of those things that he sees me do, he sees me go, like, there'll be something really tough and I'll go, I'm taking that. Like, I call it, that one's mine. I will figure this out. And, like, you know, I've had eviction threats. I've been through the ringer and I go, I will own this and I will solve this and I will figure this out. And he sees Dad stepping up and being really responsible. And the thing is I'm not naturally responsible. I'm very naturally irresponsible. Like, I eat too much food and I'm a natural addict. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of things where I'm like, I am not the example of a role model. But I'm also open that I'm trying to learn how to be, especially for my kid. I like, you know, I had an every other weekend dad. So to be able to have almost, you know, 50-50 with my son, I see him every single week. I'm a part of his life every single week. And I have a significant impact on his life. That's changed my mentality. It's one of the reasons why I'm not just a comedian. Like, I can't just go be funny. Like, I also, like, no, I want to help kids develop their self-esteem when they're young. Because I think the greatest thing parents can do is give their kids esteem where they go, no, I can take this on. I can do hard things. I'll take the responsibility, Dad. That, to me, is just the parenting win.
And I think that's, you know, something that can be brought, not just for a few days, not just for one day, a one day solution. You know, that's showing him fucking dicks out for Harambe, dude.
it's building for the long term, right? Everything right. we do, whether we realize it or not, is building for the long term. That bad habit, it's going to have long term effects, and that good habit is going to have long term effects. Right.
And yeah, and sometimes it's hard to see that right off the bat, though.
So we're impatient as shit.
Yeah, like
we're so impatient. Dude. We want results now. Come on, right? Like
doing this fucking so long and like nothing, but then, well, like you break it down, you're like, okay, yeah, I guess. Yep, guess maybe did do something. Maybe did do something. Maybe got that a little closer. Move that shit along a little more. Learn a little bit.
Yeah,
learn a little bit.
And like, if you're able to look at yourself honestly and reserve some criticism, right? Like, you don't need to be criticizing yourself when you're looking at things. So you right. can go, oh, I've made progress here. I haven't made progress here. I could readjust this. I could take away that. You know, like, you can look at things practically without being like, you piece of shit, you ate the cake again. You know, like, you don't need to do it. Like, you are a piece of shit for eating the cake, but you don't need to say it. You know what I mean? But like, I'm kidding. But someone's listening to this while eating cake. Oh, oh no, put it down. I think we have a real hard time being honest with ourselves because we have a hard time being honest with each other, right? Like, if I was honest with every single person I met, they'd be like, oh man, this guy's really trauma dumping. Oh, this guy's kind of unhinged, right? Like, there's too much honesty. And yeah. I'm a very open person, so I'm cool with it. I like being like that kind of person, but people would be overwhelmed if everyone was like that.
Well, unless we all adapted to, you know.
Which I think would be a really interesting society. Imagine a society that always said what they were thinking and always didn't beat around the bush and faced conflict head on and didn't avoid confrontation and learned how to talk through it. Like, I think that's a pretty cool society.
I think so too. And I don't know. I don't know how that gets there. That's the hard part.
Want to know my theory?
No.
No?
No, what's your theory?
Let's talk about cucumbers then. Yeah. Man.
No, we're talking about pickles because this is like the pickle podcast. But so what is your theory?
My theory is that because building for the long term is kind of embedded in everything. It's embedded in the businesses that get built in this world, the programs that we learn from. Like, I believe if we had to find the seed, it's education. And like, my theory is, if we're able to get away from these curriculums that make all these kids learn the same way at the same time, and we learn, we accept that individual learners learn individually. Like, all of us learn at a different pace at a different time. And that we started adapting our environments for that. We started adapting the way we taught for that. Like, 90% of teachers are women that can sit down quietly through a day and be attentive and let their kids do their things. Especially in Canada, that is the demographic. Whereas, like, young boys are full of energy. They need to run around. They need to get rough. A lot of them don't learn in those environments, you know? Yeah. And so, like, our outdated curriculums, because there's so much red tape to go through things, is really hurting people. Whereas, like, I would say, just like, we got to blow up the city, bro. We got to demolish those systems. We got to start over. We have to adapt. We now have technology. We now have tools. We now have kids can learn differently in the same room. You can have kids at a center table collaborating together. You can have another kid with noise canceling headphones learning from an iPad. You can literally have that all in the same room. You can have someone in a sensory room. You can have other people learning tactfully in like a sand pit. You know, like, you can learn, you got to remember, like, Helen Keller learned how to write and read from water, right? Like, Anne put water on her hand, Anne Sullivan, I believe her name was, and puts water on her hand and spelled it out. And that's how she learned what writing was. She couldn't speak. She couldn't see. She couldn't hear. And she learned how to be a fucking author. And I look at that and I go, our education system, how are you failing us when someone like that can learn this way? Like, don't you understand it's more unconventional than we're given it? Like, conventional education, I think, is a real problem.
Well, I mean, because, like, the education system was built by the, like, the current one, built by the Rockefellers.
Yeah, that's not great, isn't it?
Yeah.
And, well, yeah. And, like, and obviously we know, like, we're going to get real hippie about it, but, like, anything that's teaching people how to comply and not teaching people how to be autonomous and stand up for themselves is probably not a good system.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we can't be operating in compliance systems. That's... Unfortunately, like, we can't all just be like, yes, sir. You know, that's not life. And that only serves people with a bunch of money that have a bunch of power, right?
Right. And I mean, yeah, dude, like, when I went through school, like, I was not of that. I could have benefited from a lot of different learning styles.
Yeah, man.
And
how many people grow up dyslexic, ADHD, whatever it is? They're tossed these labels on them. Oh, you're on the spectrum. You're this, you're that. And then it's about trying to treat that. And I'm just like, no, why don't you just treat the education system that it's ready for that? That it's ready for ADHD kids. That it's ready for children on the spectrum. Like, that the system is ready, not the kids. You know what I mean? Like, we put it all in the parents. We put it all in the families. And it doesn't make sense. When we have the knowledge and education that we don't learn this way, it's why I'm such a big advocate for play-based education. It's why I'm such a big advocate for discomfort. These are things that I really stand by, because when push comes to shove, no matter what our technological advances are, I go back to sticks and stones. How do people learn? We learn like lions, like the way they teach their cubs through play. We learn through doing. We learn through mistakes. We learn through connection. We learn through community. Those things are sticks and stones and never fucking going away, no matter what Elon Musk puts in our head. Okay? So, like, for me, I got to keep us on track and be like, no, let's stick to the fundamentals. The fundamentals will show us the way. We're going to have to do this unconventionally, but it's going to be based in the fundamentals that have been there since the beginning of time.
And the fundamentals are so overlooked so often in so many different things. You know, you can do a million, like, go for wrestling, I guess, even for an example. You can do a fucking 630, a fucking code red, you can do whatever, but you don't know a fucking wristwatch from a wrist lock, and you don't know how to fucking, you know, sell a punch. You don't know how to do that, but you can do all this other shit. But, like, without that, like, you're losing, like, the whole base. Or, like,
well, you know, it's interesting about, like, using wrestling as an example. You could say the fundamentals are technique, but then you could go deeper and say, well, no, in pro wrestling, the fundamentals is storytelling.
Yep.
True fundamentals is storytelling, right? Why is this? Why are you getting into a grapple? Why do you circle when the match starts? Why do you size each other up? What happens when you lock? When you go in for the lock, that fundamental, when the two people that are against each other clash, when the horns go, right? Why does the heel lead the dance? What does that mean about good guys and bad guys? Why is the good guy always fighting uphill and the bad guy is always pushing him down? What's true about that? And that, to me, is the fundamentals. The fundamentals is in the storytelling.
That's a good point. So, you know? Well, okay. So when you were at, you were telling me before we started that you were at the show, and you were, so was it like partway through the show that they stopped it, or was it like between a match or something that they had you come on? And
no,
and
they had me as the pre-show. So I'm literally opening up for a wrestling show at 6:15 p.m. There's kids in the audience. I'm doing my act. I'm eating it. But my son is watching me do comedy for the very first time. I put a reaction video of his reaction on my Instagram if anyone wants to check it out, just because it's adorable and you get to see my son being proud of me and it's cool. So, awesome. Like, yeah, there's some internet trolls that's like, don't use your kid for clout. I'm like, I'm not using my kid for clout. I'm showing you a kid feeling real joy. And I felt real joy. I hope you find something, bro. Like, God damn it, man. But like, I kept my confidence up even though I was eating shit. And no one really noticed. They had a good time. And then the wrestling show started. And, you know, there was wrestlers that got bigger laughs than me. And what I learned from that in terms of craft is, okay, wrestling crowds need interaction. The next time I do this, I will interact with the audience. I will not do my set. I also learned that, like, it's weird being surrounded. Like, having an audience on four sides of you is a weird feeling.
Especially if you have a camera, if you have a hard cam, and you have, like, that one side that you have to, like, it's
that
really
you have
weird.
To play to. And you know what's funny? Did you see that wrestler that won't look away from the hard cam? Have you seen that guy?
Uh-uh.
There's a guy who has a shtick where he'll be fighting and looking at the hard cam. So if they're going sideways and he should be looking the other way, he won't. And he'll do like a clothesline while still making eye contact this way. And it's so fucking funny. It's so funny.
I love that shit, man. Like, you know, like being able to go and bring something like that into it, something that's like, you know, it's sort of breaking the fourth wall. I mean, I guess it is technically breaking the fourth wall.
No, it completely is. It's the Annie Hall of wrestling moves. And it's like he's looking directly at the camera. He's trying to pin them, and the guy's going up, and then he's just looking at the camera while pinning him down, pinning him down, pinning him down. And you're just like, wow, is this guy really telling a story just through eye contact? He's telling a story by refusing to break eye contact. That is so fucking interesting. Like I'm just like the psychological, like you show me a movie that's doing that. You won't, you know, and like
that would be a movie. That would be, but I mean, you can see it in wrestling. So I mean, wrestling already did it. So, but I mean, that would be a fucking.
But all these mediums serve something, right? They serve teaching us a way of doing things. They expand the way our understanding. Because the truth is our understanding is never cemented. Right? Like the one thing that's cemented is all things change. That's the one thing, that's one certainty we can pretty much count on. But everything else is just, you know, I'm doing the Matthew McConaughey Fugazi Fugazi, you know, that whole thing. Like it's just in the ether. But when you see people that are stuck in their ways, they think their understanding cemented. They think they know the world. They think that they have a good idea of how things work.
Which is the moment where you got to be like, no.
How many people were humbled by the pandemic? Right? Wait, we can work at home? Wait, the government's just going to give us money? Wait, I can work in my underwear? like, they're just like, what? Like, all of a sudden, everything we knew wasn't what we knew anymore. And now that we know this information, none of us know what to do now.
Right. We'll go back to what we know.
No one wants to work. We didn't have to. You told us that my job was not deemed important. Right. I don't know what to tell you, bro. Like, you know, oh, we want people back in the office. Why would I commute? I just spent 2 years not commuting. Like, you know, our understanding's different now. And people are like trying so hard to hold on to these ideals because maybe it benefits them. Maybe it makes them feel safe. Whatever it is.
I think that's exactly it. And so many people, I don't know why offices, like, I'm surprised office spaces did get turned into like, you know, like kind of like malls, just like make them into like old folks homes or something. Like I thought office spaces were all going to be obsolete, but then they all started going back.
I think the future of office space is definitely going to be experience space. People will start using physical spaces to be immersive. And if it is an office, it's going to be an immersive office. There's going to be VR headsets there. There's going to be ways to interact with the environment. There's going to be ways that you learn from that environment and customers get a different experience than they would online or in person in the past. So, like, I do believe that immersion's happening. I do believe that we will live in the hybrid. If I'm getting really philosophical there, I do believe everything will be a mix. I do believe we're going to be amalgamated, but I don't think it's going to be technology taking over. And I don't think it's going to be us returning to the way things were. I think it's going to be a weird hybrid that we did not predict or understand. And I don't think we're ready for what AI is going to do, but I do think we're going to adapt to it. So, like, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's going to fucking hit us hard, but we're also going to, we're going to be okay.
Like what you were telling your son.
Yeah. Like, we can do hard things. Imagine just saying that to all of society. We can do hard things, guys. Like, that's all, like, sometimes I think my message is so like grade kindergarten, you know, like it's such a kindergarten message sometimes.
But back to that wrestling, that's what you need. That's how you communicate. That's how you get to everyone can be like, yep, I get it. Why not, man? Like, it's why not have that common denominator where everyone can get it and understand? Like,
yeah, I never understood why someone would make a thing that people wouldn't get. You know, like, I never understood why, like, a really smart philosopher wouldn't learn how to speak to someone that struggles with reading. You know, like, yeah, like, I just never understood that because I'm like, there's no classism in ideas. Like, ideas should be for everyone, right? Like, learning should be for everyone. There should not be classism in learning, but there is, right? And, like, especially with funded systems, especially with funded educated systems, right? Like, so there's people that get a private education that's, like, a better education. But, like, you know, The Holdovers is a popular movie that's up for an Oscar this year about a private boarding school. I'm reading Catcher in the Rye about this guy dropping out of boarding school, you know, like these prep kids. It's such an interesting culture because they're always the ones that are the most angsty, most nihilistic, the most privileged to be able to be that. And I thought I was going to be nihilistic because I love punk shit. I love skulls. You know, I got a demon on my shirt right now, you know, like people don't get that about me because I'm such an upbeat fuzzy bear kind of character, but like, I love punk shit. I listen to punk music. I like people doing wild ass shit. I love watching wrestling botches. Like, I'm just like, I don't know. I just love this shit. And that's where I get a lot of my energy and my grit and that kind of stuff is from punk shit, you know? But like, what were we just talking about? I did have a point with that.
Education and everyone learn.
I lost my point. I don't even do weed anymore, believe it or not. So yeah, I'm completely straight edge right now. But like, yeah, I'm sure I had a point and it'll come back to me if we're meant to talk about it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So then there's so much with trying to get anyone to, oh, you're talking about the private schools? Was in with the premise?
Yes, the there we go, right?
Fuck, so, yeah, like, I'm high as shit.
Fuck yeah, that's so funny. You got there. No, I'm saying, like, I should default to nihilism, but because I am more blue collar and more just kind of like, yeah, going to my local community center and volunteering at things and doing this and that kind of thing, it actually breaks down the ego that I'm like, I don't get to be nihilistic. Like, I don't get to be all doom and gloom and none of this matters and I, you know what I mean, there is no God. Like, I, to me, I'm like, no, there's, my neighbors exist, you know, that person exists, that, you know, I don't get that luxury. So I do think certain philosophies and ideas are just a like a privilege. That was that was the full thought.
Okay. And then, like, the YMCA dude, dicks out for Harambe for everyone at the fucking YMCA dude. The YMCA dude, everyone's just there, they're just everyone with everyone. And
yeah, and at those prep schools, everyone gets their own steam room, right?
Yeah. So let me ask you about this, about the steam room with the Y. Do you ever have people coming in there with essential oils or do they put lemons in the fucking?
I have not seen any of that. It is the same dirty ass chode sweat smell every single time. Sometimes there's a hose in there and people will like try to hose things off as if that's going to do something. And I'm like, yo, these smells live here. They are soaked into the walls. We will never escape the smell of man sweat.
Right.
And that's what it is. It is sweaty men sweating from every orifice, armpits, buttholes, chodas, ball sacks. That's what it is. It's beautiful. And guess what? You're breathing in all that. You're breathing, oh. You're breathing all that sweat in, and you're sitting there and you're talking to some guy beside you who's telling you that his son just graduated college and blah, blah, blah. And you're there breathing in his chode air. And there's something nice about that. It is just so, it is absolutely disgusting. And I really like it as a social activity. I think it's good for people. I wish that people could work less and just be naked and smell each other's chode sweat in good conversation.
I think it's an important thing, like metaphorically and non-metaphorically.
I mean, what, like, just listen to this is like, yeah, listen, taking in someone's chode sweat is, it does matter. You're right.
Yeah. It does. And if you've been in a fucking steam room, you know that. You know how important it is. And you know how good a steam room is, like, just to be able to have that. And then, you know, you got other people in there, like, it's a good place to be.
It's, well, a good fuck. For me, like, listen, man, like, sometimes I look at life and I'm like, oh man, the absurdity of this thing is so overwhelming, right? If I look at what's, yeah, if I look at what's trending, oh, not good. It's never a good hashtag.
You do, right? That
I used to, I used to, yeah, back, okay, in the day, see what's trending, and it'd be like some war or something, you know, like it'd be whatever hashtag that country or whatever. Did, and
so when you're doing that, I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
Did you like tailor any of your act to that? What was trending?
No, I wouldn't, because like, that's the thing. It didn't serve a purpose. It didn't serve a purpose other than me being caught up in the zeitgeist of things, right? And
right.
And now, like, because the things that I'm going to talk about on stage or what happens in my life, nothing that happens on the internet enters my act, you right. know? So, like, for me, like, it didn't serve a purpose other than maybe nosiness. Like, I'm, like, you know, curious what everyone's talking about, like, you know? But, like, I'm at the point now where, like, my algorithms are wrestling and comedy. There is nothing outside of that. I have the best algorithms. Oh, and thirst traps. So okay, yeah. Wrestling, comedy, and some booty, some kick, yeah, for days, right? Like, that's it. But I love it, you know? And for me, I'm just like, I don't know. It's weird because I'm such an advocate for education, but I'm also an advocate for just like, you know, blue collar living. I don't need to be any type of way. So I'm never really taken seriously by those in higher education organizations and stuff like that. But I also don't think I'm necessarily wrong.
But they may not fuck with Uncle Cliffy anyway, man.
They may not fuck with Uncle Cliffy. That might be what's and up.
Maybe they just wouldn't anyway. Maybe they just like, I have a preconceived notion of like, oh man, fucking, I don't need to listen to Uncle Cliffy. And then that's just what their existence is. And
how many people go up to someone else in their head and they're like, what do they know? What's that person know? Instead of going, huh, what do they know?
What do they know?
Like, right? Like, what do they know? And what do they know? It's just a little difference of like wanting to really know what someone else knows and thinking that you know better. And I don't think I know better than you, Rusty. I don't think you know better than me. I think we're equally lost, brother.
Right. Yeah, I would agree.
Look at your hairline. There's no way you have the answers. No. Fucking look at mine too. Yeah. I'm starting to bald like a fucking pizza missing a slice right now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I got the whole pizza back here, Missy, man.
So you might be the same as me. My Portuguese ancestors, they all had skullets. So the really like, you know, big hair around here and then bald at the top, party in the back, existentialism in the front, you know? So like you might be skullet bound like me, brother.
I think so. I think that's a good place to be, man. Like,
gotta accept it.
Yeah, I tried to, you know, cover it up. Like, when was it? Maybe like a year and a half ago, I was working a wrestling show and I had a hat on. And then I took my hat off. And then immediately someone was like, you know, making bald jokes and shit. And then I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. Look at my fucking bald spot. Look at this shit. This shit is fucking beautiful. You
draw a picture on it,
head.
Brother. Yeah.
Like, you got it. you know, like I said, when I went on this my Mormon talk show, sometimes you gotta shit your pants, because like we were saying back with R-Truth, man, like just him fucking doing that. Like if you walked up and you went into like what he's done recently, even like with going to the show, ended up in Austria when they went to
that
Australia.
Was so funny. Yeah, because he's not even on the show. The show's in Australia, and he does a thing where like, hey, I'm in Austria, where is everyone? Now he might have just been in LA or whatever, right? But it's so funny because he's like, even when I'm not included, I'm included. Like he was still like, people were talking about that video as much as they were talking about the event, you know, like, and that's someone who understands, like I've seen, who was it? It was some podcaster that was calling R-Truth and was like, I think you're way smarter than you put on. I think you're a genius and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Ron Killings is there going, oh, you think that? No, blah, 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 nah, right? He knows what he's doing. The guy is so smart. And like the fact that he'll never let anyone like tell him he's smart tells me he's the smartest guy in the room. Like, I really believe that he is so intelligent that he knows you do not need to prove your intelligence. That, like, I truly believe that. Me, I still have a bit of ego where I want people to take me seriously. I want people to believe in my vision. I want people to back up what I've been trying to build in my company and, like, back up this idea that we can learn through discomfort and through play-based education. And I have, because I feel like I have something to prove. He's smarter than me because he knows that he doesn't have anything to prove. And that gives him the most confidence I've seen in any other human. And you think about the way his humor is all misdirection, right? He calls a team by the wrong name. He tries to join a heel faction as a good guy. Like, he's just doing the things you're not supposed to do. He's the kind of guy that shows up to a car wash with a bicycle. Like, he just doesn't make sense. And that to me is so funny. It's almost, it's like Leslie Nielsen levels of funny in real life. And I'm just like, how are you a spoofing reality? You're a genius, brother.
Because he's also doing it like Leslie Nielsen, where he's doing comedy straight. He's just doing it as fucking straight as possible. Like, he's not like over the top being goofy about it, that he's fucking, you know, doing the misdirection, but like,
and he does the running jokes, right? So the whole, like, he'll get something wrong and then the, oh, my bad. Oh
yeah.
I gotta go. My bad. Right. Like there's not a lot to that, but there's so much to that, you know? And like he makes tough guys crack. It's so funny. Which like is, we enjoy him making us laugh as much as we enjoy him making other people laugh.
Right.
Dude, I can't get over how beautiful of an entertainer this guy is. Like, I am so obsessed. People think I'm nuts. I'm like, the way you're talking about him as if he's like the creator of Stoicism. I'm like, isn't he? Like whatever he is seems right. Like, he just feels so right to me.
And like the fact that he can go out, you know, anywhere, like you're saying, like he can be in LA and just like get as much people that fucking do a fucking hour Broadway fucking match, kill their fucking body. He goes and does one little thing like, oh, hey, I'm in fucking Austria, not Australia. Like, oh, shit, dude, that's what, like, when you leave somewhere, like a comedy show or wrestling match, like have that one moment even of like, I remember that part. Like if you have a 2-3 hour wrestling show, what are you going to walk away with? Maybe if you're lucky, 5 things, and by the time you go back the next month, maybe 2 or 3 things.
Well, but you know what's really interesting about that is what I believe they walk away with is the story of the night, whatever that was to that person. Maybe they were in the nosebleeds and the guys behind them were loud as shit and that's part of their story for that night. Or maybe they were in the front row and Cody gave their kid the belt. That's part of the story that night. Everyone in that audience, you have 20, 50,000 people, depending on the event, leaves with a different story. They all leave with a different story. They all witness the same thing. But it's not just the stories we're watching. It's the stories we're living in the moment in real time. And, like, that's what's so brilliant about it. Like, I always leave comedy going, what was the story I presented in the night? And what was the real story of the night? Right? Because you have, like, oh, this happened in the show. But what you didn't see was that I was in the green room, maybe crying right before the show. Or, like, you know, like, I just had to console another comedian or something like that. But you saw one thing, but there was something else happening, you know?
What comedian's thinking that other than you? Who else is thinking that way? Is anyone thinking that way?
I'm sure there are that think in different ways. I know that comedians love to wax poetic. Like, we're always thinking philosophically about this because we're engaging in something that's quite different, right? We're engaging in public discourse where we can be heavily criticized in real time, where there could be consequences in real time, or there could be giant victories in real time, you know? Like, and one of the things that, like, whether we know it or not, we are engaging in the art of storytelling. Even if it's a small joke, that joke has a beginning, middle, and end. There's no ways about it. It's all storytelling. So, like, I am just overly, like, into it. Like, for me, I'm just such a fan of comedy that there's not been a single heartbreak in this industry that's made me love it less. It's made me see more thorns. It's made me see more ugliness, but that hasn't taken away my love, you know? And for me, it's like, oh, because I truly love a story worth telling, a life worth commenting on. That's what I love. And I will not deviate from that, you know, like, I'm convicted, bro. Whether I'm right or wrong, I stand in my conviction on this, you know, like that. Yeah. I believe, like, in this story driven life.
Which is really overlooked. And then going back to the fundamentals, like you said, like, it is a story driven life. And
everything we learned was from stories. Every culture has its own creation story. Like, everything is stories and energy, right? Like, if you look at science, everything's energy. You look at society, everything is stories. Even animals, right? There was a cheetah, there was a gazelle. The cheetah chased the gazelle gets eaten. There's a story, right? And now that cheetah lives to tell another story. That's the way that goes, you know? And so, like, what, now you don't have to like that story. It's an ugly story. And if you are rooting for the gazelle, that was an awful story. But if you are the cheetah, well, that was a victorious story. So it really depends. Like I said, everyone has a different story of the night.
But then if you're the gazelle, you got to have that story. If you're rooting on the gazelle, you got to have that story of the gazelle getting fucking taken down. Like, that's going to teach you.
Well, that gazelle got taken down, but but you know, his sister got away. Well, now his sister's got a different story, right? Like,
right.
And now his sister knows what happens when there's a cheetah nearby. You know, so, like, that's the thing. Now we have more information. Now we have more knowledge. Now people always, like, I get worried about the way we medicate anxiety and the way we, like, deviate from fear, because fear and anxiety tell us a lot of good things. You know, like, they actually kind of help us with core memories. They help us develop really useful knowledge. So to medicate anxiety away, to try to get rid of these things that we're fearful of, I don't actually believe is a good thing. You know, like, I believe feeling depressed is probably the correct reaction to most things. Oh, like, you saw the situation in Gaza and you felt depressed. That makes sense. It's depressing. It right. Sounds pretty depressed, but this is the difference. Sitting in that depression is doing nothing for us. The more we sit in it, the worse we feel, right? So we can't control that. We can't, and there's things outside of our control. What is within our control? Well, we can control accepting that we can't control it. We can control how we make things better for someone else today. I'm doing my best to have a valuable conversation with you right now because you run this podcast and I want your episodes to be good. I want you, when people are saying, hey, Rusty, where should I start? I want you to go, hey, check out the Clifford Myers episode. We have really interesting conversations.
Check out both Clifford Myers episodes.
Check them out both. One day we're going to have 10 in the can, and then 20, yeah. You know, because like one of the things with you is you took me on your podcast when your podcast, you know, is just an amateur indie thing. And I'm just an amateur indie guy. You have nothing to prove. I have nothing to prove. Cool. So that means we can just watch each other grow as time goes on. I watch your set get better and better. And you can watch my career flourish or burn and crash and burn and whatever it's going to be. But like, I like those kind of check-ins, you know what I, and now I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think so. I'm very positive about the future. Like, I think I'm heading in a great direction, but I do also think that like having these kind of check-ins, especially like even for me to look back on, oh, where was my mind at that time? And like my ideas around education haven't changed. I think we probably touched on some of this last time, but like it's, you know, it's my obsession, right? And I'm really obsessed with how we learn and how we connect. And so, and I very much simplify it to stories. I think the best way we teach people is through stories. I think the best way we live a good life is by living stories. Like, I think that's what it is.
Well, when's the Uncle Cliffy school going to open up?
I, you know, so like my company is The Other Comedy Company. If you people go to theothercomedy.co, and one of the things we do workshops and stuff right now, but we are going to have online courses at some point. We're going to have story driven courses about how to tell the story of your like how to tell your own story, how to kind of view your life as a story. Where do you, if you're someone who's not confident, where's that coming from? What do you need to overcome? Understanding who the dragons are, what the dragons are, and what you need to slay, like identifying those things. We're going to release some courses around that. That's most likely a 2025 thing, though, just being perfectly honest, because I'm in the middle of developing youth programs and senior programs with community centers. So I'm trying to pilot some programs right now. And it takes a lot of red tape to try to get through these. I need to have a lot of conversations with a lot of people. And I'm not getting paid to have these conversations. And we're not going to get paid a lot to do these programs. But these are things that I really stand by. And I think I need more data. So, you know, it's something I'm pushing forward. And that's what this year is all about, is pushing forward those pilot programs.
Yeah, and I mean, you need to have those, like, you got to get to that spot, like, if, because, yeah, I mean, like you're saying, education system needs to be fucking blown up and rebuilt.
Oh, man, and, like, one of the things when I was doing, like, just the corporate workshops, you got to remember, when I first started, this was just a corporate thing. I was just doing training for corporate companies. And then, but I was talking to all these, like, you know, top level executives and people leaders and all these people that were like, I love this as a team building activity. I love that you put us through a pressure cooker. We learned a lot about trust. We learned a lot about confidence, but I wish my kid could do this. I wish my mom, who was recently widowed, could have some of this experience with what you're talking about around self-esteem. You know, like these were the feedback I was getting. And I just realized like, yeah, this form of education is for everyone. It's not just, it's not a, really a product, even though I, you know, I have products and services and sure. But ideally, the ideas behind this is for everyone. Anyone can go create their own kind of play-based education. Anyone can go and pilot programs for people and communities. Like I don't have any hold on anything. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things where it's like, it's open source because we should learn from each other. And if someone else can take my company and do it more successfully, go do it.
Fuck yeah.
I don't fucking care, because yeah, I think you're going to be onto really good things and help a lot of people. And if you help more people than me, well, my ego doesn't need to help more people than you. That's great. I would love to learn from you. Yeah, fucking awesome.
If someone has a bigger audience that can go and get what you're doing out, like, then what's, how's that a bad thing at all? Like,
I do not give a shit. Yeah. Like, for me, I give a shit about it being in the hands of the right people, of like the right people becoming more confident. I want to see youth have more confidence in their identities. I want them to really understand what that means. I want them to understand that, like, spending too much time in our identities can be a bad thing. That, like, how do we actually make a community? How do we take our faces away from the phone? And how do we look at each other in the eyes? Like, these kind of things are really important. And I want kids to grow up knowing that they have worth, that they have value, that no trauma, no parental neglect, none of that defines the direction of their life. Because your father wasn't there, you don't have to be an addict. You know, these are the things that, like, I really mean that. Like, we don't need to go down that path. And this is the thing, is intervention is really hard. We've learned this. We're trying to intervene with homelessness. We're trying to intervene with drug addiction and the fentanyl problem. It's a horrible, horrible endemic that's been going around in this world. The answer is not in intervention. The answer is in prevention. The answer is in, we need to get to these problems before they're problems. And, but the problem is we have a reward system and how everything is built. Everything is on funding and, you know, a call and answer, where prevention, there's no reward for prevention. If someone prevented 9/11 on 9/10, they don't get an applause because 9/11 never happened.
Also, I was just going to make the comparison to.
Yeah, well, that's from the book, The Black Swan. There's a book called Black Swan that I think is the first one to use that comparison in terms of, like, prevention theory. And I think that's to do with the Black Swan theory. I'm not smart enough to understand it. I'm sure ChatGPT can explain it to me. But yeah, but it's, you know, but it is true that if we were prevention focused, community focused, if we embraced discomfort, if we went and did that at a young age, if we didn't force our ideas on young people, our religious ideas, our societal ideas, the things that divide us culturally, right? Like, but like the things that are great about our different cultures, we share. Like, I love, like, there's a guy at the YMCA, he's an Indian dude, and he just came from India about 2 years ago. He's telling me all about his culture all the time. I love hearing it. I love hearing how this guy grew up, what football means in his culture, why that sport was so important to him, why competition was so important to him in a big family. Like, I love hearing that, and I connect to it in a different way. But, like, it does suck when North America has become so comfy that we have this fast food generation that gets everything like that. We get things delivered to us in 2 days. You know, it set a false expectation that we're not to be patient with one another. And that's why you see people online not having patience for other people's learning curves. They don't have patience for where someone, oh, you're ignorant. You're saying that because you're ignorant. Okay. Give them time. Oh, no, let me educate you. Not your responsibility. That's not your responsibility to educate that person. Let them. Unfortunately, learners learn in different lanes, and you've learned this, but they haven't, and you're mad at their learning curve. I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
Sounds like
that's a huge problem.
Yes, that's what it sounds like, you know? So, like, you know, like, I look at these things and listen, man, like, I love doing comedy, but I can't pretend that, you know, addiction and family, broken families and familial problems and all these kind of things aren't more important than my jokes. Like, they are. They are more important than my jokes. And it's one of those things where it's like, I struggled with this. I struggled with, like, my identity as a comedian, because I don't feel like a comedian when I'm in this research mode and doing these things. You almost feel like a sellout, right? Like, I'm like, oh, I'm doing a business and I'm doing this and that. No, my intentions are in the right place. I am trying to be a force for good. So, like, I have that mentality, but it's hard to get there. And honestly, what I'm doing is incredibly tough. Bootstrapping a startup is incredibly tough. Being intentionally impoverished is very tough, right? And I've lost a lot of relationships that just don't fuck with me anymore because they're not about this. But I've gained new ones. And there's a comedian, I'm not going to say who, but it's someone I really, really respect. And he wrote me privately and just told me that, like, he had so much faith in me. He said, I have so much faith. Cool. That you are not going to give up on this. I have faith in your grit. I have faith that you are such a messy bitch that you're going to get there one way or another, but you're not, it's not going to be clean. You're going to get there, but with your knuckles dragging on the ground. And that to me gave me life. It was like, thank you for seeing me. Cause sometimes it feels audacious. Like I'm pursuing a different conversation. I'm in the crossroads of comedy and education, entertainment and education. And like, it doesn't always make sense. So it feels like the only thing I have is audacity. But I'm also thinking that every great innovation happened was birthed from audacity. Someone audacious enough to give a fuck and then try.
And you're having to carve your own spot. You're not following in someone's path to get to where you're getting to. And so.
And it sucks, bro, because no one understands me. That's the thing. If I were to say this on a personal level, like I deal with imposter syndrome every single day because I feel incredibly misunderstood. I feel really misunderstood from comedians. I feel misunderstood from, my friends in my life. You know, like they try, but they're not interested in the same things I'm interested in. And that's why we only ever really congratulate people once they win. We don't really congratulate people for trying. And that's what that comedian did. He came up to me and was like, Cliff, I see you trying.
I think we should all try to do that. Go out, reach out to someone. It's like
someone that you see going for it. Just send them a good word. Just be like, bro, I see you putting yourself out there. That must be difficult. I commend you on it. Rock and roll. Keep going.
Yeah, like if you go to a restaurant, like how many times have you gone and you look at the, I don't do this because I don't like this. I don't like the Yelp or Google reviews or stuff that's always like a million people putting like, oh, this was dog shit. This person, these people are stupid or whatever. Going and like calling up and saying, hey, fucking so and so did a really good job. Please give them something positive. Probably won't, but like, do something like that. If you're going to go and make a complaint about something, go and try to do the other as well.
Well, it's just energy output. Like it's where you're putting your energy. And like, if you want to put it in that bucket, like I live in a small town of 20,000 people. Come on. The amount of retirees in this community that have everything to complain about, like it's insane. They literally complain about every social issue, everything. And I'm one of those people that like, I don't complain that often, you know, like I have gripes. I have things I don't like. But I look at it as like an observer. I kind of go through the scientific process of exploration. You know, like I try to treat it that way because I look at things as an investigation. I don't look at things like black and white. And there's so many people in my town that will just have this negative opinion being like, it'll be like anything. Be like, I can't believe they close at 4 and not 5. You know, whatever, you know, right. Something that silly. And I'm just like, why can't you just take the extra hour and go sit on a bench and enjoy the birds? Like, what's happening right now? And like the amount of times that I take when I'm in the summer, I move to a little beach town because I want my feet in the sand. That like, and I want to raise my kid with his feet in the sand. That was really important to me. And people pointed the finger and they said that I was committing career suicide. By taking myself out of a major city hub that had lots of shows, that taking myself away from the major metropolises, that like I was not going to be doing comedy again. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. I'm not going to be doing comedy the way you are. I'm not going to get to hustle the way you do. I'm not going to get the same opportunities. But I'm doing this on my terms. I'm raising my kid by the water the way I want to. And for me, like, you know, comedy taught me freedom. That was the thing. It's so interesting that one of the things that almost all people talk about is freedom. If I can save enough money and I can be free in my retirement, or people being like, yeah, get your hands off my guns because I want to talk about freedom, right? But when you actually see someone living free, which like really free, it's offensive. Oh, who are you to not work a 9-to-5? Who are you to just be sitting around with your feet in the sand? It's offensive. Freedom is uncomfortable. And I have a question for anyone listening. If you had freedom today, what would you do with it? Right? Like,
right.
It's fucking scary. Like, what would you do with it? And like, I don't, like, some people would abuse that freedom. Some people wouldn't. Now I'm earning freedom And by earning freedom, what that looks like for me is creating something that's better for other people. That is how I earn my freedom. Right. And that might mean I become a servant to this thing. And that means I work long hours and long weeks and I have to make sacrifices. And that is freedom for me. I've chose to serve this. You know, so there's no truest freedom. We still have a timeline. We're still going to die one day. You know, like so like there's not the truest freedom. We can't just leave Earth. You know, we're not Elon. We can't just hop in our fucking space Teslas and head to the moon whenever we want. So yeah. Like, you know what I mean? Like we don't have true freedom, but we can pursue it, but you also have to understand you're going to offend people. By that pursuit. I literally offended people by going to a small town, which was so silly because I'm like, it's not your life, it's mine. You get to, hey, you get all my spots now. Enjoy.
Yeah, dude, they're probably jealous. They're like,
I don't know if it's jealousy. Yeah,
that some might be. Or they could just be like, yeah, like what's he know? And then what does
Yeah,
he
I think
know?
I think it's disalignment. I think they're just not they're pursuits are not aligned with my pursuits. Their understanding is not aligned with my understanding. You know, I had a club owner take me out for breakfast and apologize for kind of ostracizing and not liking me because of my bravado in the past. Because I came into a room as if I owned it, as if I was better. I didn't even know that. We didn't have a conversation. I didn't even know I pissed this person off. You know, and it was an amazing cathartic thing to go through that experience, being able to understand that I had that impact on people, that I did alienate people. And that was a disalignment on my end where like, yeah, maybe I didn't realize that I'm not the only one in the room with a dream. You know, like yeah. It's not all about me. Right. Like, so what I'm talking about, those people not understanding my choice, well, I've done the same thing. So like, that requires a certain level of empathy that I don't think is natural. I think we have to learn it, and I think we learn it the hard way.
For some people.
Some people are naturally empathetic. I don't know. It's very tough for me, but...
Yeah.
It took me a bit of time to learn it. And like, I needed a couple ego deaths. You know, people right. are like, I had an ego death. I'm like, I needed a couple.
Yeah. You gotta shit your pants.
Yeah.
Shit your ego pants.
I like that.
So... Okay, so I'm going to have to, if it's been a year, that's, we should get on like I'll put you on my 3-month plan, get you on every 3 or 4 months or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, I love it, man. I love popping onto the podcast. I like catching up with you, seeing what we're doing. I think we had a great conversation today, you know? Yeah, so, like, yeah, it's probably a good spot to call it, but like, and you keep it under your 2 hours, which is good. Yeah, but yeah, okay. Man, like if people want to connect with me, I'm Clifford Myers, Clifford like the big red dog, Myers like the serial killer. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on TikTok. Yeah, just say hi. Let's share ideas. Let's talk. I just like connecting.
So wait, what about Martin Short?
What about him?
Clifford. The movie.
Oh, that movie was garbage. That was a garbage movie. Maybe I got to rewatch it. I just remember when I watched it. I hated it when I first watched it, but maybe it's worth rewatching. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know. Yeah. But fuck it, dude. I don't know. If not, whatever. Don't watch it. It's do it or don't. Whatever, man.
Whatever, man.
Yeah, dude. So well, I'll get you back on here in 3-4 months, something like that. And so it's not as long, but we can have another part 3, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you, Rusty.
Yeah, appreciate you too, buddy. We'll talk soon, all right?
All right. Peace.
All right. Peace. All right. That's Uncle Cliffy. He's the new Uncle Cliffy. So I can get it. We're going to get some headbands. He needs some Clifford Myers headbands for Uncle Cliffy. Because Uncle Cliffy used to wear headbands, so... I like this. So you guys, thank you everyone for being here and listening, staying till the end. Thank you so much. Yeah, shout out to Clifford Myers, man. Fucking, I like talking to that guy. So I kept it under 2 hours so I can clip this and put it up because he has clippable stuff. So Thank you, everyone, for being here on the Rusty Diamond Podcast Network. And that is the show. Man. Boom.
It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker. It's Rusty Diamond, motherfucker.